Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
He is the host of the Sean Salisbury Show, Sports Talk 790 in Houston on the Dialpad guest line. Dialpad helps you make smarter calls. It's always a smart idea to put in a call to Sean Salisbury. He's one of our favorites. Good to have you on again, Sean. Thank you for joining us. Happy holidays, man. It's officially that time of year. Oh, Sean, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I was told Sean Salisbury was there. I feel incredibly lied to. Damn you. Damn you all. Damn you all to hell.
The pros can see through the wire.
Totally. So we're going to get Sean here.
Or fair enough, he might have been on the line and just passed out.
He's just
out.
Like, yeah, I don't want to talk to these guys. No,
I'm going to the refrigerator for another beer. I'm not doing this show sober.
It's not a bad idea. It really is.
Oh, absolutely not.
I've heard worse, that's for sure. What a day for the NFL yesterday. I mean, it really was a good one. I don't know if we've had a more interesting slate of early games. We obviously wrap up with, what, Eli Manning revenge game in Philadelphia tonight, a little Monday Night Football.
I can't believe he's on TV again.
Hey.
I'm telling you what, you scout well, this looks like that first round matchup.
Absolutely.
Either way, whether they're the one or the five, I think that's how this breaks down.
888-957-9570. More of your calls certainly coming up right now. The call has finally gone through to Sean Salisbury. Sean, I just gave you the big flowery introduction. I'm not going to do it twice. How are you, man?
No problem, brother. I'm good. Good to be on with you guys, man.
Good to have you, man. So I think we just watched the game of the year in terms of what we saw yesterday in New Orleans, and I don't think we're doing radio in San Francisco makes me feel that way. If I were doing radio in Houston, I think I'd be talking about what I saw yesterday at the Voodoo Dome. That was a special football game for this league.
And two special teams with a whole bunch of special players and quite possibly two of – I mean, when we're talking the last 20 years, I mean, Andy Reid would be in there, Josh McDaniels. I mean, the two of the best play callers, Sean Payton may have been the best over the last two decades, and Kyle's not very far behind the way he's calling it. And you're right, you don't have to be a member of that city or a team covering that team, either of those teams, to appreciate what we saw. And you know what it reminded me of, guys? When I was in New Orleans last year for that game, the Saints and the Rams game, the same week in Alabama, put it on LSU that night. It was the Sunday after that, and it was a similar game. You remember it was like in the 40s, if I'm not mistaken, a great game. Yesterday was what may be a rematch of sometime in January. I was fascinated by so many stars, but how good the coaches are and how not one team flinched. It didn't matter how the momentum was going. And for the 49ers, after Drew took them down, to respond. And I laugh at when people kept, you know, we talked about this in the preseason, guys. Are we worried about Jimmy? I said, it's a preseason, man. And we haven't seen Jimmy play a full season. I'm talking about consecutive. Well, you're seeing it now, and you're starting to see why everybody held him in such high regard. And I think he had a bone to pick. Everybody, Drew Brees, it's the Saints offense. The 49ers defense is their bell cow. I think Jimmy wanted to prove a little bit yesterday that there's more than one bell cow on this team. And he did. It was fascinating football, great football. And I hope we get to see it again, because I'm not real sure who the overall better team is. And I'd sure as hell like to see it in January, depending. I don't care where it's played, because one of those two teams may very well be a team playing in February.
I know Garoppolo is now the hot failure, the hot flavor, even among people who might have been skeptical before. But yep. Isn't this game that he played yesterday sort of more of the same, in which he is whatever the 49ers need him to be? Early on, he needed to be the guy who was the game manager, did nothing foolish to hurt them. And yesterday was the game where he had to be basically the guy with the ski mask on running into the bank. So isn't this really more sort of a testament to the idea that the 49ers have a quarterback who can do whatever they need to do, he doesn't need to do the same thing week in and week out.
No question. And I love that is a phenomenal point because, and isn't it great when you get a coach like a Greg Roman slash John Harbaugh in Baltimore, who instead of being stubborn and doing what they got to do and my way or the highway, decide, you know, we got this Lamar Jackson kid who's really good. Let's take our ego out of it, do a lot of the great things he does and actually make him better and enhance what he does so it enhances our team. I think Kyle Shanahan thinks the same way, where they all have egos, but the ability to adjust, the ability to make not only just in-game but weekly changes about how to attack, and you're 100% correct. See, a quarterback who can just do it one way, there may be a time when you got to go 15-21 for a 145 and no picks and a touchdown and run it for 200. And Kyle knows that, and Jimmy obviously does too. And I'm not sure you can pay a higher compliment than what you're talking about, than a guy who is what you need him to be. One weekend he's got to put a cape on yesterday, and the next weekend he can, you know, be the caddy for the guy who is going to be, that just does this, give me first downs, don't get us beat, play smart, our defense is playing out of their mind, and we'll gut this one out and win 21-13. Okay, no problem. Yes, and that is, when you're talking, how many guys in the league can do that, fellas? How many guys in the league can be that guy? There's certain guys, let's use Jameis Winston, for example. He's got to let it rip, and when he's going, you got to put up the numbers, throw you 3 picks, 5 touchdowns, and you hope that day something else happens. He's a wonderful talent, but he's not changing his game. I love Jimmy's approach, and I think that as long as Jimmy continues and Kyle continues to approach it, but they don't really care who gets the credit for what, the team's going to be a success. This team is quantum leaps ahead of where they were supposed to be in August. And come see me in about, 6 to 9 months and a couple of years from now plus, when they finally get the players all on the same page, understanding what they're trying to accomplish, and they stay healthy, look out. This is the best quarterback they've had since Steve Young, period. And that may not be saying much in between, but I'm just telling you, this is the next guy in line. And I'm not putting him in Joe and Steve's category, but they got him for this reason, to be this guy yesterday, and that's exactly what he did.
So I want to ask you, Sean, a semi-technical thing, although really it's just that you know so much more about football than I do. There's a distinction that I think we don't make enough as more casual observers between play calling and game plan. And obviously we saw two phenomenal play callers, two phenomenal coaches yesterday, and we hear all about the creative play calls and the, you know, they're so tricky and all this sort of stuff, and both of them did that effectively yesterday. But is there sort of a line between, okay, I'm a creative play caller and I'm going to throw something weird at the wall here and call a goofy trick play, and then I go into a game with a philosophy about what's going to work in these situations, and the situation and the philosophy together dictate what we do more than just I'm freewheeling with creative play calls?
Yeah, teams that live by gimmicks and coaches that live by gimmicks, you know why they do that? Because they know they got nothing else to turn to, that's the one. Most good teams line up and beat you with their substance and what they do and utilize. You see the Patriots, they use, even though they didn't win, they use it. We've watched the Rams do it. We watched Doug Peterson do it in the Super Bowl. We watched these two. I've seen both of these teams do it. Kyle is not calling training. Hey, listen, I know a whole bunch of great assistant coaches that would not be good or have not been good as play calling defensive or offensive coordinators because getting in rhythm, and Kyle obviously calling the plays, but being in rhythm, all of them know X's and O's. To be able to know when to apply what you put in during the week and what it looked like, and when you know what the tendencies are of the defense, that this is the time. Quick change turnover at midfield. Bingo. Let's hit this. But the great ones aren't using these, and I've tried to tell people this for years, they're not using this as a gimmick. And that's the point you're making, which is a great one, is when these teams like that put these trick plays or these double passes or pitch pass, when they use them, they call it at a time, and it sometimes is a guessing game. They expect that to be just as successful as an inside zone run, meaning this is a staple for us. If you know, we have all kinds of different names for them, but the gimmick pass and those things, they're used. We in Minnesota, Brian Billick was great at these, and Denny Green, but we didn't call the pitchback pass or that for, hey man, let's just do it because we're going to show people we're smart. When to use it, how to use it, and then the key is to finish it. you finish it. And that's what I mean. And think about the difference. Remember back when Sean Payton onside kicked coming out of the get boom from the get-go. They're not using those because, hey, let's just guess so everybody thinks I got the balls of a daytime burglar. He saw something and said, this is the time to apply it. Now the key is, do I have the guts to use it? And then my 11 dudes to execute it. So you're exactly right. And somewhere along the line, guys, whether it's the Saints or the Niners or the Patriots or the Andy Reid getting in the diamond formation yesterday, you know, and putting Kelsey at the tight end and running Reid RPO and him running it in, people are like, defensive coordinators will spend hours trying to prepare for one play during the week. So they do this as part of their staple, and it'll change the next time, whether you use it in game one or game seven. And when it comes up big like that, and it can be anything from, you know, the gimmick plays that some people call them, but this is part of what they do. And the brilliance is that you've executed it, and people who try to run plays that they didn't execute during the week are just plain stupid. And neither Kyle nor Sean are either of those things. They're brilliant and know when to go after. It's a true talent to be able to do that and apply it when you apply game plan and your brilliance as a play caller.
Sean Salisbury here on 95.7 The Game. He calls Houston home, and yesterday that was a very interesting result with the Broncos coming out ahead of the Texans. I don't think a lot of people had that one. I'm going to include you on that list. What happened?
I went into my show last week, guys, and I said this sets up for who the Texans are. A great quarterback, some really spectacular, there's some really good pieces, but this would be them to not handle success, to play the Denver Broncos, which would be their most, in my opinion, critical, miserable loss of the year because of the timing of it and a quarterback getting his second start at home coming off a Patriots victory. But that defines who they've been. I've gone through it, guys. I watch every game and probably three or four times, going back over it and in my mind and on film, on tape, and rewatching it and thinking to myself, okay, if they got guys in particular positions, why does this continually happen to this team? And it comes down to two things for me. They are horrible at handling success. And it's one thing to tell a team to, hey, play through adversity. Well, every dude that steps on the field faces it. You know you're going to face it during a game. But it's another thing being able to play through success. They're not good at it. And the final thing is I look at the best teams in this league right now. The bad plays don't fester, neither do good plays. They just keep it moving. This team is not mentally tough. See, because mentally tough teams don't mention the word or let anybody mention the phrase around them, oh, it's a trap game. You know, trap games are for us in the media to talk, yeah, they got him. Who the hell goes to trap games when these dudes are in 16 games, the difference between the 32nd team, like the Bengals, and the best team in the league, Baltimore, is a quarterback, three or four more players, and about 8 to 10 plays a game. That's the difference, and I'm telling you, and a coach who has a clue. So who takes those for granted? And they just don't understand the ability to sustain it when they win. The best thing that happens to them now, you know what history is going to tell you? You should expect the Texans to come out and go into Tennessee and play like gangbusters this week. But this is December. Things change, and Mike Vrabel's got his team playing well. Mentally tough teams do what they do. Sometimes get to January and lose. Sometimes go 11-5 and get on it and then get to January and lose. Maybe win one playoff game, but they don't know how to sustain success. So maybe they need to sneak in the back door and then get in the playoffs and get you a game. But I've tried and tried and tried. Mental toughness is a weakness for this team as an overall team. Not every player, but the whole says they don't understand success, and that means they're mentally weak.
Sean Salisbury, always the man. Thank you so much, Sean. Really appreciate your time today. Enjoy your mentally weak football team this week.
Hey, hopefully just a week, man. Hopefully for just a week. I appreciate you guys. Keep it up, and congrats on the game yesterday.
Thank you. Man, I tell you, Ryan Tannehill. He looked like Dan Marino in Oakland yesterday. 42 points for the Titans.
I can't believe I didn't listen to Sean Salisbury last week because I had Houston in a survivor pool.
Put Ryan Tannehill's last 5 weeks and extend it out to a year. He's probably the MVP.
He's having a monster season.
Part of that is that Derrick Henry is healthy now and apparently is not able to be tackled.
That helps.
But beyond that, I mean, nobody has been lower than him, and now nobody is better, apparently, than him.
I don't know if it's an indictment on Mariota's inability to look like this or an indictment on the Miami Dolphins to get anything out of Ryan Tannehill before they moved on. We'll have all that for you a little bit later on. Don't you go anywhere here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Good to have you here today, day after. One of the best football games I've ever seen a regular season cough up. I mean, that was outstanding yesterday in New Orleans. 888-957-9570. Somebody here is like, surely you guys are joking about Ryan Tannehill. Well, first of all, don't call me Shirley, and we would never joke about Ryan Tannehill.
It's not a joking matter.
Not here on this program. Somebody says, before you put Ryan Tannehill into the Hall of Fame, just look at the crap-ass defenses he's faced the last 5 weeks. What a joke. No! You don't get to play that game anymore. That game's too stupid for afternoon drive. You go play that in another day part. We ain't playing the, well, who were you playing? But it doesn't matter. 5 weeks in a row. Do you know what Ryan Tannehill's over 100 passer rating 5 weeks in a row is?
Four weeks.
It's a better stretch of that than Derek Carr's ever had in his career. Derek Carr's never put 4 weeks together of a passer rating that Ryan Tannehill has just had. And Derek Carr was drafted and has not changed teams, hasn't been given up on, not yet, by a franchise. I mean, Ryan Tannehill was left for dead. He's a guy that when you heard got another shot, somebody would tweet about Colin Kaepernick. That's how off the radar he was.
And here's the thing about Tannehill. Those last four games were not just over 100. His quarterback rating over the last four games has been the lowest for a game was 131.2. He's been between 131.2 and 155.8 for 4 weeks now. His overall rating in a four-week stretch is 144.2. That's not just bad defenses. That's also a guy who's playing pretty darn well.
And nobody said he was going to the Hall of Fame anyway.
No, of course not. We're not putting him in the Hall of Fame. We're saying he's playing very well, and that's a fact.
And he played very well in Oakland. Second-to-last home game the Raiders are ever going to see, and they got skinned alive.
Ah, come on. They only gave up 552 yards.
They had half as many points as the other team. Could have been worse.
888-957-9570. Back to New Orleans, where the combination of Shanahan along with you-know-who.
Gucci gang.
And Sean Payton and Drew Brees really spit out one for the ages. It was a first half that I think reminded almost everybody of Kansas City against the L.A. Rams just last year. The 30 minutes of football that were born out of just incredible coaching, execution, design, incalculable numbers and hours of practice. It was amazing. And the fact that the second half lived up to that first half just goes on to show you what an absurdly entertaining football game that was. And you got to credit on that sideline the aging quarterback and the old coach who still officially know what the hell that is they are doing. That is a fantastic pairing that has been so overshadowed by Bill Belichick and Tom Brady's success. But we are looking at as well-matched a quarterback and coach as you'll ever find in league history. You've got a genius in Sean Payton who has done as much to push offensive game planning and play calling forward over the last decade as any offensive mind in football. I mean, really, has been spectacular. I know this sounds like something that it doesn't, maybe because it's happened, it doesn't sound so impossible anymore, but until it happened, you know what sounded impossible? The Super Bowl champion New Orleans Saints. Like, that was one of those, like, if the Los Angeles Clippers or the Atlanta Hawks ever win an NBA championship, it'll sound about as normal and roll off the tongue about as normally as the Super Bowl champion New Orleans Saints. That is a joke of, a franchise that these two guys put on a map.
Well, the Philadelphia Eagles won 2 years ago. I mean, it can be done. You get the right players, you stay healthy enough, and you have a coach who knows how to do things in game and between games. I mean, Doug Peterson is considered a very good coach. I mean, he's biting it in Philadelphia this year because there are no healthy players.
Yeah, that's never good.
I mean, he's trotting out Villanova every week.
You know what that sounds like? It sounds like the situation the 49ers were in last year.
Yeah, but the difference is that 2 years ago, the 49ers were also banged up, and they were awful then, too. Philadelphia has not been a materially bad team for a long time. But when Peterson got them, he got a team that was healthy. He lost his quarterback and didn't miss a beat. But everywhere else, everybody else was upright almost the entire year. And what it tells me is that if you can be healthy the entire year, you have a great chance to play 19 or 20 games.
It is a war of attrition.
Yeah, it's which is one of the things that actually sucks about the game.
I think that's also one of the things that's wildly impressive about this Niner team. They haven't been healthy. I mean, they've had health at a couple of key spots, undoubtedly, but they've now lost three offensive linemen at various times.
The war of attrition has been attrished.
Yeah. They've lost defensive linemen, impactful ones and less impactful ones. They've lost corners. They've lost safeties. They've lost linebackers. They've lost everybody but the quarterback, which obviously that's a good thing. But nevertheless, the Eagles haven't lost their quarterback. I would say the injury distribution has not been so much worse for the Niners, and that's a credit to the way they've performed.
It'll be part of the story if they do this. I'm still not convinced that they will, because I think Baltimore is still a hair better, even on a neutral field. And I still would like to see them beat Seattle once in a huge game before I start crowning them anything. But, yeah, injuries are a part of this. The thing that they have had going for them is that the injuries haven't happened on top of each other at the same time period. They've been spaced out, and they've been able to overcome them because – they haven't been piled high at the same time.
We've got plenty piling up right now. Dee Ford expected to miss the remainder of the regular season with a hamstring that was pulled yesterday. Richard Sherman expected to miss a couple of weeks. I think it's easy to see that strung out to the remaining regular season as well. Weston Richburg, he is done for the year. If you're seriously like asking, so what's the one other curveball we can throw at you? All right, this late in the year, losing your starting center, like okay, like you're really gonna do, you know, you're really gonna just go with the understudy there? Yeah.
And look, a year ago when Weston Richburg went down, nobody was that upset because he'd been playing injured and he didn't look very good. This year, Weston Richburg has looked like the guy they went out and grabbed in free agency for a reason, and that's another painful loss.
It's a big one. It's a big one. The Graybeards in New Orleans, they did their job. We're going to have young guys stepping up as backups now to do the job. And, you know, credit to the young head coach and to the young quarterback, even though Jimmy's really not that young. He just looks so young.
Wow, that came off creepy.
Yeah, well, yeah. Supposed to.
These two guys. Right. Well, it worked.
Yeah, these guys have proven worthy in every single way after two seasons that I'll file the last 2 years under led to great disappointment, not necessarily great doubt. I never really doubted Shanahan, and I never really doubted what a healthy Garoppolo might be able to do for this team. But you kind of want to see it before you start expecting anything to happen. And look, you got a head coach that I don't think you'd trade for any other head coach in football. That's who I think Kyle Shanahan is.
Well,
I think
there might be one.
There might be one, but if we are going to say for the next 10 years, that one is eliminated instantly.
Okay.
You know, he really is. So that's who Kyle Shanahan is, and you'd hoped that the quarterback would have as much instant credibility as the coach seemed to have. And God bless Jimmy. He tried to flex as much instant credibility as a 5-0 start will get you. He tore his ACL. We had to forget about him for a full football year. And now he and Shanahan are having the you got to prove it to me year in a way that the harshest critic would have to say these guys are getting A pluses in a you got to prove it to me year.
I think all coaches are in a you gots to prove it to me year all the time. So I don't know if that's necessarily true, but the test that they both passed is that when given other tools, they haven't wasted them. And I think that is as hard to do for any player in football as anything, because it's not just attrition. It's sometimes you have talent and you don't use it correctly. I mean, Odell Beckham has made exactly zero impact in Cleveland. And it's not because they've fallen in love with Jarvis Landry. It's they don't know what to do with that guy. When the 49ers drafted Michael Crabtree, they didn't know what to do with him. What the 49ers have this year is not just Garoppolo. It's a lot of guys who have been put not only in situations where they could succeed, but in situations where they'd have to have to explain why they didn't. And to me, that's the thing that stands out about it. It's that nobody has gotten in the way of the other talent.
Let me throw this at you, too, on the Garoppolo thing specifically, because it's easy to forget about this now. We're not talking about it much. It's been 2 years since the contract was signed. Jimmy Garoppolo next year is going to be a $26 million cap hit. Kirk Cousins and Russell Wilson and Matt Stafford will all be 31. Aaron Rodgers will be 32.6, Ben Roethlisberger 33.5, Matt Ryan 33.5, and Jared Goff $36 million cap hit.
Right. Dak was supposed to get 35, and it's so scary that they might franchise him.
Exactly, which would pay him average of the top five, so 33-ish. And as much as we talked about the contract, as many people as were saying maybe Nick Mullins should be getting more looks at the beginning of the year, we're going into next year where if Jimmy Garoppolo's healthy, he'll be a bargain.
Or he'll be restructured.
Maybe, but 20...
I'm agreeing with your point, but it just reminds me of, you know, well, they're not doing bad with Mullins. It's because people were conditioned for this team to be bad. And now they've been given a team that's really good and has excelled in nearly every game they've played. And all of a sudden, nobody's saying Nick Mullins' name at all.
Nope.
At all. If Garoppolo goes down now, it's a blue panic.
Yes.
Last year when he went down, people were going, oh, well, maybe we'll see if we have some quarterback depth that we so sorely need. Yeah.
You want quarterback depth? Emmanuel Sanders.
Yeah.
Man, what a that you know, we were just talking to Sean Salisbury about when you're going to uncork your tricky play. Is it gimmick or is it really going to be a weapon? They uncorked that one. They uncorked the Kyle Juszczyk option play yesterday that I guess they've been working on like the Dickens in practice. It was, mwah.
It's a statement that they had to use them because those are ones that you might like to save for the postseason if you could. But that game was essentially a postseason game.
It was a pull out all the stops on both sides.
So they basically had to say, if there is an unthumbed piece of the playbook, somebody gets fired. So, I mean, to me, it was not just that they worked. It was that they had to use them then. Because, you know, week 14 is not when you decide, hey, look how clever I can be.
By the way, if you're going to fall down and no one touches you, keep running.
How the 49ers respond with a fake. Garoppolo's got all day. He's going to launch it deep down the field, going for it all and getting it. Emmanuel Sanders, not touched, still on his feet, inside the 10, and he scores! 75-yard bomb from Jimmy Garoppolo to Emmanuel Sanders.
I don't know if I've ever heard an opposing team's fans as loud in New Orleans as Niner fans were. I saw, I believe it was either Matt Maiocco or somebody who was traveling with the team shot out a picture, and there was an awful lot of red in that building yesterday. Emmanuel Sanders says he noticed.
Oh, man. I walked out. That was a home game. When the game began, I was like, all right, the Saints fans definitely showed up. But we were loud today, man, and they showed up. And I've been feeling it since Friday we got here. You know, I've been a part of a lot of great organizations in the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Broncos. And, man, the 49ers fans, man, they travel well just like the rest of them. And, man, they're in the lobby. They're enthusiastic about their team. And so I'm happy to be here.
I tell you, you almost forget that, you know, we're dealing with NFL royalty. Niner fans, you've been a sleeping giant for a long time for a lot of reasonable reasons. There wasn't a lot to cheer about. In a year that there is something to cheer about and the first time in a long time, it's been impressive the way that they've showed up on the road and made an impact, made a difference. 888-957-9570, Javier in Vacaville. Hello, Javier.
How you doing today?
Doing well, thank you.
So, now, I listened to a few other radio stations, and I heard, like, on one last Monday, and I kind of killed that argument that Seattle with the, you know, the win they had last week and the Niners lost to Baltimore, that they control the destiny. But I try to tell them, I said that cover three zone they run with deep third, middle third, deep third, and the bars what they established in Seattle isn't what it was. I mean, you've seen how ineffective and how inefficient they are in their back end defensively, and the defense, obviously, to, you know, the blind eye, it's not what it was. And for them to give 28 or however many they give against L.A. last night, when San Francisco's, they can play with any style against any team, whether they're playing run first, defense first, special teams, making plays, offense creating, any type of mismatch. Not only is this the team built to be any type of team in regards to how they play, but they have so many different levels of how they can execute, which is why they're multifaceted. Chris Carson is the only hog on that offense other than Russell Wilson. The Niners, I'm not saying Mostert, Breida, and Coleman aren't great running backs, but you can see it's a form of the scheme with the outside zone of why they have so much production. The Niners proved yesterday that the NFC goes to them, because for a second when they lost in overtime, granted, they have Kittle, Witherspoon, or goal. I thought that the Niners were still past or not over the hump of beating Seattle. But yesterday showed me that San Francisco, come 3 weeks when they're almost at full strength, they're going to play for that not just only division title, but they're going to play for the number one seed. And this cognition that Russell Wilson can save the Seahawks past immortality is just incompetent. Russell Wilson's a great player, but the way they lost last night, and they put stress on that back end, their defensive backfield, they're just not the same team as San Francisco.
Well, look, the Seahawks aren't as good as their record. The 49ers might be a team that's actually better than their record. The Saints, after that loss, are certainly better than their record. The Baltimore Ravens might be better than their record. The Seahawks they're really good, and they figure out ways to win. If anything, yesterday just showed you, I don't think we learned nearly as much about Seattle last night as we did that the Los Angeles Rams will be heard from before the season is over. Anyone who wants to just count them out, they are ripe to play spoiler.
I wonder, though, if we didn't actually, and this is where I think maybe I'll ask Michael Irvin, because I need a more experienced football mind. I wonder if there's not something there to what the Rams defense did that the Niners could learn from. Because that they made Russell Wilson look as bad as he's looked all year, and they ran the ball fine. So I pressure is certainly part of it, that they were on him a lot of the game, sacked five times. But I wonder if there's something scheme-wise that the Niners could learn from, because as much as there have been struggles for the Seahawks this year, and I think you're right, they're probably not quite as good as their record, they've been a pretty tough offensive team most of the time, and they were more or less shut down yesterday. I mean, it's a 6-point, 2-field goal offensive performance.
Every team's capable of a stinker now and then. That's what it looked like to me. It
Maybe.
Didn't look like anything other than, they're not playing well today. And I think there are but 3 or 4 teams that don't have those, and then everybody else is susceptible to them. Explain Houston. You brought it up with Sean Salisbury earlier.
Man.
They were god-awful.
I can't.
In a game in which you can't call it a trap game. You can't. I mean, just, you know, you're actually, I mean, unless they thought they were already in.
Or is Drew Lock good? Is it possible Drew Lock's good?
Drew
it's
Lock
possible,
isn't still, bad. It's still too small a sample size.
Yeah.
But they haven't established, A, that they're a powerhouse in the conference.
No.
Or, B, that the division is already theirs, unless they thought that. And, you know, Salisbury's their boots on the ground, so he would know better than I. But teams do that. I mean, you know, Green Bay can look at the 49er game and go, that's not who we are, and then come back the next week and prove that it's not who they are. I just think sometimes stuff happens, and you look for explanations, and the explanation is stuff happens.
Yeah.
although that's that fair. Stuff is not the word I'd want to use.
I want to throw a question at you for us to consider next break, and Ray's not going to like this, but it comes from the text line. We occasionally get a good suggestion there, and someone asks, or in fact says, extend Emmanuel Sanders now. And I think that's an interesting question.
If Why you would could, I not like that?
The fact that it came from the text line, not the question.
Oh, no, yeah, no, the text line is a barren desert of ideas.
Right, that's what I was expecting okay. from you there. If you could do it at, you know, without breaking the bank, if you could do it basically at the similar rate to what he's been paid, which this year his cap hit was about $6 million, would you sign up for two more years of Emmanuel Sanders at six per?
Well, I hate to answer a question with a question. What's the argument to not do it?
Yeah, well,
I
money
can't
spent
come up
elsewhere,
with
I guess.
So the very first thing you need in next year's draft is a wide receiver. Why would you say goodbye to your best wide receiver until you got your next one in, right?
I mean, tend to agree.
So Emmanuel Sanders, two-year extension right now, golden. I'm do it.
Well, first of all, I'd be a two 1-year extensions more like.
Sure.
So it committing to him for another year while you draft the guy you hope will replace Emmanuel Sanders.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a smart suggestion from the text line.
I have no problem with that at all. 888-957-9570. If you're on hold, we're going to say hello to you. We're going to do it in the next segment. And we're also going to bring you Michael Irvin at the top of the hour. We look forward to that conversation each and every week. And, man, we got a good one to talk about. It was a great day of football yesterday. Much more on the way. 888-957-9570. All courtesy of Fremont Bank. Full service banking. No compromises.
Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
I think the 49ers have four big questions left to answer. Obviously, the biggest out there is, are you going to be division champs? Or are you going to have that number one seed with a bye? We need several weeks to go by before we know the answer to that question. The second thing is Richard Sherman going to last the season? The answer is maybe not. Richard Sherman is going to miss at least 2 weeks here. I think that his experience, fellas, gets filed under must-have in any Super Bowl winning equation, even a Super Bowl contending equation. I don't see how you go to Miami expecting to win with Emmanuel Mosley as a starting, you know, and
I want to test this.
I like Mosley.
I want to test this with a sort of more boots on the ground question. If I tell you
John Dickinson.
Okay. Oh, that's a good answer. But if we're going into week 17, obviously a big game against Seattle, okay? And let's just assume they both win from here. So you effectively need to win that game to assure that you're going to have
gots to have it in week 17.
Right. How low would the percentage chance of re-injury have to be for you to put Richard Sherman in that Week 17 game? Like, if there's a 15% chance that by playing in Week 17, you lose Richard Sherman for the playoffs, do you say, you know what, I'd rather take my chances without him in Week 17 and know I'll have him for my first playoff game? Like, how low do you have to make that chance of getting injured? Because that, to me, is sort of the test.
Yeah, that's a hard question to answer because, again, I just said, I don't think you can win it without him, but I also know that home games are easier to win than
yeah.
road games.
I mean, it's tricky.
And if you're telling me that week 17 is now a gots to have it, then I need Richard Sherman to play that game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the equation that I'm stumping for. I can't disregard it because it's not the postseason yet.
And that's basically the situation they're likely to be in. Because, I mean, hamstring strain, yeah, he could be much better by week 17, but the odds of there being no added risk, very small.
Yeah.
No, there's very definitely added risk, and I would be leery of playing him. And particularly since I believe him to be a lousy patient.
Right.
As in, he would say, I'm fine. I would take his word almost last of all because of that.
Right. You're going to need an MRI.
Because whether you're playing at home or on the road, if he's not there, you're in a measure of hurt that you don't want to be in.
And I kind of think, especially after what we saw yesterday, and even in Baltimore, I trust this team in road games to show up and give their best effort and do a heck of a job. And I think I would rather have Richard Sherman on the road than hosting. Like, let's take the Saints. Would you rather go back to New Orleans and have to beat them there with Richard Sherman or host them without Richard Sherman?
Just to get out of New Orleans, I think I'll take him without Richard Sherman. I really do. I think I'll take the home game. Only because you just brought up the one outlier dome that scares the hell out of me.
That's true. That's not the best example.
Richard Sherman, question mark, big question. Will you be the one seed? Big question. Two more. Can this team absorb the Weston Richburg injury? He has been lost for the year with a torn patella tendon. I mean, what are you seriously going to get out of yet another backup? Can Ben Garland be anything like Justin School or Daniel Brunskill, both guys who stepped in admirably for starting tackles? Outside of starting tackles, find me the other offensive line injury that would be hard to absorb. Starting center, boom, there it is. So you got to deal with that now. And if he does punt on the remainder of the regular season, do I get a truly healthy, ready-to-roll D Ford throughout the playoffs? That would be interesting. Like, maybe I can absorb Richard Sherman ain't here if you're going to tell me D Ford is here for all of it. It certainly would make it a lot easier. That's a big thing to keep an eye on.
I think the question there is the Ram game, because I have a feeling that's going to be more important than we thought it was a couple of weeks ago.
Sorry, the question where?
When the 49ers play the Rams in week 16.
But I'm not sure what question you're referring to.
Well, no, I think that's suddenly going to become...
Oh, just a bigger game.
Yeah, where you just go, can he handle that?
Well, they're saying that they expect
Ford's
him to miss
that,
at least
sure.
3 weeks with okay. the hamstring. So that's definitely the Rams game.
Well, no, but what I thought we were talking about the center still.
Because Richburg. Oh, absolutely. Donald?
Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
That's
I think that's where you will get the answer about whether they can survive.
It's a litmus test.
Yeah, because, you know, Aaron Donald is still a monstrosity.
Yeah, and the question there becomes, can you keep him from totally ruining the football game? Not can you keep him out of the backfield all day. That's not realistic. Can you keep him from destroying everything you want to do?
Right.
Yeah, and what it might mean is you start seeing more quick dump-offs, maybe less running and more get rid of the ball fast.
Get it outside away from Aaron Donald.
Right. Yep. So, I mean, I think that might be a more tactical thing, but as you say, Aaron Donald can ruin a game. I mean, he was a bit of an issue last night.
We got the playmaker, Michael Irvin, in 6 minutes. Until then, your calls. This is Brian in Palo Alto. What's up, Brian?
Hey, guys. I think on your comment on D Ford, I haven't really had a healthy and ready-to-roll D Ford all year. So I think expecting to find it now is probably not going to happen. I think with regards to how the Rams dealt with Russell Wilson, and this is, you know, a slight concern with Saleh is, can Saleh scheme and adjust to an opponent specific, you know, show something completely new. But the Rams were going to play every single time Russell Wilson dropped back, whereas the Niners...
Well, and they got him five times. Brian, your phone's cutting out on us. Keeps on cutting in and out. You sound like you're ordering a Big Mac, and I don't know if you want cheese or not. So thank you very much for the call. Jonathan, San Francisco. What do you got, Jonathan?
Hey, guys. I just want to say, remember when the question was Derek Carr or Jimmy Garoppolo or even Kirk Cousins or Jimmy Garoppolo?
Well, oh, yeah.
It's been answered with a resounding yes. And not only it was answered with a resounding yes, man, with the way this team is so entertaining, it's off the charts. I won't be surprised if they win a couple of Emmys. And then your wives and daughters go hide them because Jimmy has arrived.
Look, it's you're not wrong.
A lot of memes in that phone call.
Yeah. A lot of things going on there.
Feels great, baby.
You'll notice he didn't do that yesterday.
I still think that was a mistake.
He was being a perv.
I think it was something that he realized he said. The question was, am I going to go back and clean it up, or am I just going to leave the puddle?
He left the puddle. I agree.
Get your waders on. I'm leaving the puddle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can get away with it because, bling, I got a Tom Cruise smile, don't I?
He's got a great smile.
I will say this, man. That game yesterday passed the wife test.
Yeah.
It really did. It passed the wife test. Jillian, who is a Niners fan, you know, she'll take it or leave it. And in the question of this game's going on too long, she'd rather wrap it up so we can go do something. She wasn't moving off that couch yesterday. And I even asked her, I said, what'd you think? And she's like, I think that's the best regular season game I've seen in my entire life. And I thought, before I tease my wife about how she's a slave to the moment, I thought about it. And I honestly, going back to 2005, I can't uncork a more interesting regular season Niner game than that. Maybe the debut of Kaepernick Monday night against the Bears, only because of the element of new that was involved in that. But
let me read to you directly from my text thread with my wife at 12:52 p.m. yesterday. This game is bananas emoji. Kittle is a beast. I mean, everybody's in.
There you go.
She's a Bears fan. She doesn't care about the Niners. And she's still texting me about how good they looked.
She abandons...
No, I mean...
She abandons Mitchell Trubisky at the one moment when he's finally emerged.
You don't want to hear my wife's thoughts. My wife's thoughts on Mitchell Trubisky are not radio.
No, I've actually heard her thoughts because they are your thoughts.
That's right. That's right.
She's as worried about his white forearms as I am. Let's be honest.
That guy's just going to drive me crazy.
By the way, did Tim Ryan pick the wrong game to get suspended for?
Boy,
or
oh boy.
What? I mean, that hurts. That is a highlight reel game. Tim Ryan must have really felt like the reindeer not invited to the reindeer games. Matt, you missed a hell of an end of the week last week, by the way.
I know. I know.
You
know,
consider yourself lucky.
Yeah, if the 49ers are superstitious, they might not bring him back.
Oh,
no.
Sorry. Terry's we can't risk this even against Atlanta.
Terry's in Oakland. Terry, you're on 95.7 The Game. What do you got?
I need to talk about that beast call, a tight end. That is the best tight end I ever seen, and I've been watching football a long time.
If we had a tight end dispersal draft, there is no doubt that he is the number one tight end selected by every single general manager in the NFL right now. He is the best, Terry.
Well, they should go back to way back to, you know, this guy's phenomenal. He really is. I've never seen anybody carry somebody 20 yards with a face mask and wouldn't let it go.
It was something else. Richard Sherman, who's seen an awful lot of high-level football, seen a whole bunch of guys make big plays. Richard Sherman was blown away by what George Kittle did, and that he didn't give up when there was – it's like normally when you know that there's a penalty being committed that's going to tack 15 more yards on, you're cool with it right there. George wasn't.
Obviously starts with him. You know, he's the best tight end in football, and he's the most physical. You know, he's not just catching the ball and like, hey, man, I'm athletic. Like, good play. He's playing the game to be rude and to bully people. And that play, he's getting his face mask pulled, and a lot of people would just go down and complain about the face mask pull. He's like, regardless of the face mask pull, I'm going to bully you all the way to the end zone until you stop me. And that's his mindset. And, you know, we're thankful to have him because we don't win that game without that play.
Kittle now has the fourth most receiving yards for a tight end through the first three seasons in NFL history. Only Mike Ditka, Rob Gronkowski, and Jimmy Graham are ahead of George Kittle's pace.
That's the right group.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're looking for a group of tight ends to maybe be carved onto a mountain with.
Probably throw the original Kellen Winslow and Tony Gonzalez in there, and you pretty much got the best ever.
That's the list.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.